Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. A Monday afternoon, Randy Schaefer will be here a little bit later. She writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. And so we'll talk to her about some of the stories making news in social media. We start on Mondays usually with the Inno boys. Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke are here. But Randy's got a story where it's in one of these algorithm stories, you know, where they can take what you post on social media and they're trying to figure out how they can use it long term, like medicine or whatever. Mm-hmm. But by this test, they decide whether or not you're single.
Sure.
And I guess they've got an 87% return on it, that it's always accurate, except they have Donald Trump down as a single person, not married.
Well, that might not be that far off.
Recommended for you algorithms always trip me up. Like when Netflix tells me what movies they think I'll be into, like I'm pretty sure they think I'm like a 12-year-old girl.
Right.
Like everything is, hey, you should be checking out Beauty and the Beast. I'm like, come on, man.
That means Netflix has a lot in common with Jim and me. Because so we always talk about the tech industry here and the temperature of it and all of that. There was a survey recently by KPMG to look at how we're doing. And I don't know how much value there is in it, but I guess you could say we're doing better.
Yeah, for sure. So this was a study. KPMG, the tax consulting firm, asked executives worldwide to name locations outside of San Francisco and Silicon Valley. What cities and hubs do you think will be leading tech innovation hubs in the next 4 years? And Chicago was sixth. That's a big deal. I mean, you know, you don't all of a sudden I wouldn't say, hey, venture capital firms, everyone launch a fund here in Chicago. But it matters.
But it's not really sixth.
But behind San Francisco, Silicon Valley, there's New York, Tokyo, Beijing, and London. And we were tied with Washington, D.C. and Berlin, and Tel Aviv and Boston were after Chicago. And yeah, this ranking is – we asked a bunch of executives, who do you think is going to be an innovation hub? And a bunch of them said Chicago. So what does that mean? What that means is that the optics are working. We talk a lot about why optics matter. We have some of the world's best computer science majors being developed at UIC. Over 10% of them are leaving for the coast because they assume, where do I take this education? Well, San Francisco or Boston. Where else would I go? And for this kind of reputation to emerge and to continue to grow, that Chicago is a leading tech hub, not just now, but it will be in 4 years, is hugely valuable when it comes to attention and retention.
Right. And so when I say they're not really sixth, I mean, the dollars don't stack up so much, but maybe that's not where the value is, because so much of it is attitude as well and impressions, and that's what follows.
Yeah, there are no hard numbers behind this. This doesn't really take into account the venture capital figures, where Chicago does fall behind New York and Boston, and sort of volume of startup activity just in general. But this is definitely a perception survey, right? This is how people are perceiving the Chicago tech ecosystem. And the big difference is last year when KPMG did this, we were 18th. This year, we're six. So that really shows you that the business community, the venture community, the angel investing community is really looking favorably at Chicago.
There's a great anecdote that Steve Chen, who's the CTO and co-founder at YouTube, shared at 1871 a number of years ago, where he said, he graduated UIC and he left for Silicon Valley because I want to build something. Where else do I go? And he had said if he knew that there was 1871 or there was a startup activity here in Chicago, maybe he stays. And that is what this study reinforces, is that the perception of Chicago as a place to build and scale and to create amazing products is here. And that, again, not to hit it over and over and over again, but it matters. Perception matters because every city in the country is trying to build itself and brand itself as startup friendly.
Speaking of that, I had one of the general manager, I think, of MHub in last week. They had their big grand opening, right? And that's a startup facility or incubator where we actually build things, which is kind of a unique event.
Absolutely. So talking a little bit about 1871, which is the startup innovation hub in the Merch Mart, it really caters a lot to digital startups. And a lot of times, probably unfortunately, when you think about tech and innovation, digital has an exclusiveness on that, especially when it relates to talking about entrepreneurs. What MHub does is it's catering to the entrepreneurs who are making things. They're hardware entrepreneurs, they're manufacturers, they're engineers, they're working in the Internet of Things. I've interviewed someone at MHUB who's building the connected chicken coop. Steve, we talked about that before.
Yeah.
And where was this guy going to go? Where is his co-working space and resources? He needs IoT equipment and circuit boards, and that's what MHUB's for.
Where was it? Where were these guys going before?
They were leaving Chicago. I mean, basically, the city for up until Catalyze really got here a couple of years ago, that was another hardware hub. There was really nowhere to go to kind of have access to the kind of 3D printing machines that you need and the sort of CNC machinery and everything. I mean, this MHUB space has millions and millions of dollars of equipment that you could have never really had access to in Chicago. Former Motorola space, actually, that they moved into.
So we're very excited here in Chicago and in Evanston because it looks like Northwestern will go to the big dance, right? The brackets are going to be announced next week. And, you know, a lot of people follow that. They tune in, yada, yada, yada. You can watch all the games. That's nothing compared to the tech madness that you boys set up every year, right? And I can feel it in the air. We are on the cusp of yet another tech madness.
100% it's tech madness season. So tech madness, it's our fun, friendly bracket challenge to generate awareness, excitement, and buzz for the Chicago tech community. And honestly, the first year we did this, we're heading into our third year. It's surprised us. The first year we did it, we had over 40,000 votes. Second year, we had over 55, 60,000. And it just gets bigger and bigger.
And you're at the Chicago Sports Museum?
We're going to be at the Chicago Sports Museum. We're going to be revealing the bracket. So the way it works, we put 64 Chicago tech companies and startups in a bracket. We seed them based on venture capital and valuations. And if it's a company that's exited already, you know, the cost of that deal as well as the IPO price. And really, it's a snapshot of the ecosystem at large. So we have Grubhub and Groupon, but we also have, you know, 2 to 3 person startups that are being worked on in New Chicago. The idea is to be able to look at this bracket and know everything that's going on this year.
So is it a party? I mean, this is an event where people go and hang
this
out.
This is
right?
a party. This is a great networking event. If you've been hearing a lot about the Chicago tech and startup community and want to learn more, check it out. It has, we're going to have representatives from nearly every company that's going to be on the bracket there. We're going to be revealing the seeding and who made it. We're going to have a little bracket analysis. We'll have a couple VCs talking about who they think is going to make it to the final four. It's this Wednesday from 6 to 9, and you know we've been doing this every Monday. We love the listeners, so use WGN10 at ChicagoNO.com, WGN10 for 10% off Tech Madness tickets.
Which one of you – so tell me the website again.
ChicagoNO.com.
Which one of you guys dresses up and acts like you're Clark Kellogg for all of this?
Oh, I take Dickie V all the way.
Yeah, Dickie V? No, we don't want no Dickie V. No, maybe Billy Packer. Is he still around?
Grubhub all the way, baby!
It's 12:18. Speaking of Grubhub on the way, we're going to come back and talk about, we're going to talk about a smart hat, which I love, and a beef company that doesn't really have any of its own beef. That's ahead on the Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. It's 12:22. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. I'm Steve Bertrand. Thanks very much for tuning in. On Mondays, we spend the first half hour generally with the boys from Chicago. You know, Will Flanagan is the general manager. And Jim Dahlke is, he likes to say he's the best reporter. And he's got a really interesting story about, what is it called, pre-brands. It's this grass-fed beef company, but it sounds like no one who works there has ever been on a farm.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a grass-fed beef company that very much operates like a startup. They don't own a farm. They don't have any cattle. They're not processing it on their own. They sort of outsource all of that. And they are really focusing on targeting the right consumer, growing like a startup, and they've only been alive for 2 years. Saw about 400% growth last year, and they're in more than 500 retail stores.
Okay, so a typical, and I really guess I haven't thought of it too much, but a typical quote-unquote beef company would be growing their own beef. Right?
Yeah, you see a lot of grass-fed beef places that have the farm, that have access to the cattle, right? So what they're doing is they're sort of eliminating that kind of overhead cost, really focusing on the marketing, really focusing on data, collecting a lot of data to target the right consumers and kind of grow their brand, get in as many stores as they can.
So why buy the cow if you can get the hamburger for free?
I think that's about right.
Yeah, to me, this is a great example. When we started, you know, almost 3 years ago, we told we're just going to write about Chicago tech. People were like, oh, great, but are you going to have enough stuff to write about? And I think this is a reflection that every company is tech-enabled these days. Every company is a tech company. If you're not using tech products or thinking like a startup, thinking like a tech company, you're probably pretty flat. So for us, it's just about finding a company that's cool, and there's probably a tech angle there.
Well, yeah, and this is a very cool company. So the tech angle of it is, right, they get the scanner reports from grocery stores. So they're really, they're a data company.
Oh, yeah. Data plays a huge role. I mean, they have an office in River North, right in the middle of the Chicago startup scene here. And their office is made up of technologists, of marketers, of sales folks. Yeah, no farmers, anything like that.
But so many companies, and I'm sure they do as well, but, you know, if you're a food company, you're selling the potato. You know, here's where we grow our potatoes. Here's how we care. And they can't directly say that, although I know they probably very carefully watch the product. They get the beef from overseas mostly?
Yeah, the beef is almost entirely from New Zealand and Australia. So their big thing is not so much, you know, this is beef from your backyard. They're much about transparency. So they have very clear labels that say, you know, no hormones, no this and that. And they kind of very much clearly label exactly what you're getting. So they're really sort of hammering home the transparency element of where your grass-fed beef is coming from.
They're a facilitator, really. They're making some farmers in New Zealand very happy.
Exactly. And yeah, I was talking to the founder of Prebrands, and he was telling me that the U.S. is really far behind when it comes to what's going on down under in terms of grass-fed beef. It's like the standard there when it's really kind of a niche industry in the U.S.
You know, I want to jump over to the smart hats because we need plenty of time. But there's a story this week. We might try to talk to a grocery store. I don't know. I haven't talked too much with Bennett about it. But apparently people from Wisconsin are crossing the state line to come into Illinois to buy Kerrygold butter. You know, the Irish butter, mm-hmm. and it's grass-fed beef.
Yeah.
That's what made me think of it. Because Wisconsin has very strict rules when it comes to butter and cheese and things like that to protect their farmers. You can't buy Kerrygold butter in Wisconsin legally. So people are actually coming into Rockford and stuff to buy it.
Maybe we can trade them for that. What's the beer that everybody tries?
Yeah, I know we were talking
about the New Glarus.
We can make a trade.
That's
beer
trade. That's a good trade.
Or how about a little buttered New Glarus? That could be a...
I think we're on to something.
Smart hats are in the news. These two guys that come up with this... Tell me, okay, who's... Take this, Will.
It's a smart hat, Steve. We don't have enough smart items. Think about... you're wearing a baseball cap. You got a logo on it. And you head out for the day, and guess what? That logo on your hat is going to stay the same.
Right.
And that's just boring, and Steve. That's not innovation.
And they just re-signed Jay Cutler, and you don't want that logo on your head anymore.
No, I want to switch it right now. Or you got yourself a Blackhawks hat on. Oh, God, the Blackhawks hat. Switch to the Bulls, because the Bulls won. That is innovation, Steve. That's what we're talking about. So this is
hat.
A Chicago-made smart hat. It's got a display on the top that connects to your iPhone so that you can update and change your logo at any given time. And
you can even have like a slideshow, right?
Yeah, you can have a slideshow. You can rotate through a bunch of images.
Companies called Zero Wearables, and the feature I like about it the most is they have a Find My Hat feature, just like the Find My iPhone. So if you lose your hat because of the Bluetooth and because of the technology that's built inside of it, you could track it with your phone.
You're tracking the location, right? It doesn't make sounds.
No sounds.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so this is, they're selling it. Is it on Kickstarter for $99?
It's on Kickstarter. They're for $99. They're raising $10,000. And when we published the story, they were almost halfway there.
Wow. Okay. Good for them. So a couple of kids with this smart hat.
It's a great, you know, we were teasing about it, but it's a great idea. It actually, if you look at the video, it looks really cool. I can see this, you know, I imagine seeing a bunch of these at Lollapalooza this year. It's very festival wary.
And you can upload your own images, and or you use something that they've got kind of preloaded on there. Or so, I mean, basically, you can sort of change your favorite sports team, change your hashtag, change whatever you're sort of.
And it's flexible and waterproof, right? Or water resistant?
Water resistant, yeah. So and it looks pretty good. It comes in a couple of different colors too. So I'll be interested to kind of see how they're able to kind of take the Kickstarter campaign, kind of grow it, and flesh it onto a real company.
That's Jim Dahlke, Will Flanagan from Chicago Inno. One more time, Tech Matters, where do people get more info?
ChicagoInno.com.
All right, boys, see you next week. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN with the music of Van Morrison behind us. Randy Schaefer is in the studio, writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. Randy, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right. So, well, there's a lot to talk about, right? But one of the areas of law that interests me
is the laws against sexual predators, really. I'm laughing, but I don't mean to laugh. But, you know, they are sort of this extra case where you can keep them locked up well beyond their prison term if they're considered a threat. They have penalties for the rest of their lives and things such as that. And one of them is a law that we're talking about is in North Carolina, right, where you can't go on social media sites where kids are if you're a sex offender.
Right. And it's kind of interesting what you said about how this kind of brings a new dimension to things is, you know, back when we had to deal with prisoners, you know, in the 60s, 70s, before the internet, it was easy. You could just kind of like lock them up and that was it. But now that social media is in the picture, it kind of brings a whole new dimension to how do you exactly corral criminals that have this repeated use of like illegal activities on the internet.
Right. And so in North Carolina, they say you are banned from social media sites that where kids are for the rest of their lives, or at least for an extended period.
I think it might depend on what the court sentence is, but...
And they go to court then, and they're saying, well, look, social media, Facebook, is such a part of our lives now that this is really an extraordinary punishment we'd like you to reconsider, right? That's where they are?
Yeah, that's where they're at right now. And like you said, this happened in North Carolina. There's a law that bans sexual predators from using social media sites that kids also use. And a lot of these sites have terms and conditions that say you must be 13. 13 is well under the legal age of consent at 18. And so North Carolina, this man has been barred from using Facebook. And now he's arguing, well, wait a minute, you're taking away my First Amendment rights by not letting me sign up for a Facebook account. And so it is very interesting because it is kind of a gray area. Is Facebook a fundamental human right in the U.S.?
And they go before the Supreme Court. And if you read the tea leaves or listen to whether the justices are reacting, maybe with the exception of Justice Alito, it looks like he's going to win.
Yeah. And this is, again, very interesting because this is kind of a landmark case. We haven't really seen anything like this before.
So what does it mean as far as landmark? This means that you kind of, not that you would have a constitutional, but at least a federally almost protected right to have access.
Some kind of precedent for when this happens again. And this is really interesting, especially because Twitter has been doing a lot more with banning people for trolling or being abusive. So it's kind of interesting. Is it really a right or is it at Facebook's discretion? And so I'm really interested to see how this
plays out.
So
maybe you could say, well, I'm Facebook, I can decide, but someone else can't. You know what I mean? I mean, if I'm the proprietor of the social media site, I still would have control over who can or cannot use it, but
exactly.
It can't be used as punishment by government.
Right. So maybe Facebook could have some say in it, but the states themselves can't have that say in it.
There are a number of stories about how, you know, we just were talking about with Prebrands about how they're a data company that sells grass-fed beef. And so much of this data is coming from social media now that you can tell so much about people. And I know they look at different sort of surveys and try to figure things out. Tell me about this Donald Trump single thing.
So there is this study that was done by scientists from Russia and Singapore where they basically took users' social media
He doesn't
accounts.
Want you to say Russia. Don't say Russia.
Don't say Russia. Okay.
Say
by some overseas countries, including Singapore, may or may not include Russia, that take a user's social media accounts, all of them that they can find, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, shove them into this sort of virtual funnel, and then they analyze all these posts to find out whether a user is married or single. And so what's interesting about this is in order to test this algorithm, these scientists used Barack Obama's accounts and Donald Trump's accounts. And Donald Trump's accounts, apparently he uses social media as though he were a bachelor.
He comes out single.
Yes, he comes out single.
Well, so I was going to say it shouldn't count so much for him because, you know, he's a public figure. He's probably not writing all of his posts.
And
but
so,
that'd be the case for Obama, too,
exactly.
Right?
And so that's what's kind of interesting is, you know, Donald Trump, it's always a little bit controversial. Is Trump writing this or, you know, is his support team writing this? So maybe his support team is single, a ton of bachelors on his support team, or maybe the number of tweets sent by his communications team outweigh the number of his errant 4 a.m. bathroom tweets.
Right.
Or,
well, and so whether or not he is single or married isn't as relevant as the fact that they're collecting this data.
Right.
And they might be able to use it in other more useful ways.
Very true. It is 86% accurate. So it's
and so how would they use it in the future?
Well, in the future, you know, maybe your doctor can access your Facebook posts and see what is ailing you. So this kind of, I hope you don't mind me segueing here, but social media content can be used by doctors, dentists, professionals to see how your health is doing based on what you post.
Right. So if you're depressed, they can look at what you're posting and say, well,
or they can look at your post and say, this falls within the parameter of someone who might be depressed or someone who might be going insane if their sentence structure is changing and things like that.
Right.
I mean, that's a big jump, though. I can see the big data, but then how do you bring that down to an individual person in their post? Could be that's a big jump, I would think.
Yeah, and it's actually kind of interesting how nuanced this can be. You know, you can see somebody is clearly suffering from they're not really stable if they're doing these errant sentences, but even something so small as people who are depressed are more likely to use blue tone filters on their Instagram photos. And so things like this are just really interesting to see exactly what kind of data that the internet can collect about you and how that can be affect your health, how that can affect what your doctor sees about your health. You know, your dentist is going to be able to tell when you're lying about flossing based on the language you use in your tweets, you know.
Yeah, so what would they do there? Because I don't want my dentist, Jerry, to go through each of my tweets and Facebook posts, but there might be some sort of data report that doctors would get or that doctor groups would get. I guess it's far out into the future.
Yeah, that's
far
right.
As in 6 months, maybe.
Yeah, pretty far out into the future, but it is just a good reminder that everything can be collected about you on the internet, stuff you're not even thinking about.
Tell me about, okay, so if you're depressed, you're writing about being sad, missing out, things like that. So if you're overweight, the terms that indicate that you're overweight are kind of sort of counterintuitive, aren't they?
You're posting a lot about food. You're posting a lot about being sedentary. You know, you're not really posting, just ran a 5K this weekend.
Right.
If you're overweight, you're probably not using that type of
language
in your
post. You're using terms like sitting around.
You're talking about Fat Tuesday. You're talking about sitting on the couch and Netflix binging.
So vegging a little bit. So maybe they're not so counterintuitive.
Yeah, not vegetables, but vegging.
All right. Randy Schaefer from Chicago Tribune, thanks for coming by today.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. We're going to talk about airlines and the top airlines in the U.S. coming up on the Biz Lunch here on 720 WGN. Thank you, Steve Alexander. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. All right, I told you before the show started that we were going to reveal information about the latest WGN trip. Actually, we just added this one. It just went up on the web at WGNradio.com within the past, 30 minutes or so, because it just became available. Pete McMurray from WGN is going to lead a group of WGN listeners to Ireland to see, to Derry, Belfast, Dublin, to spend a night in the Kilronan Castle. I've been there a few times. It's great. But the highlight is Van Morrison does just a couple concerts every summer at this resort in Belfast, his hometown. He doesn't do many, just a couple. And we got 30 tickets to see Van Morrison in this 350-seat room. We built a trip around it, and because the tickets are so hot, we've only got them till the end of the month. So the trip is available, but you need to sign up by the end of this month. You can find the information at WGNradio.com or on my website, SteveBertrandTravel.com. Send me an email, steve@SteveBertrandTravel, if you want, or even just call me, 847-606-6065. I don't want to take up too much time about it, but the fact is, the tickets are pretty hot, and so we got to publicize it while we can to make sure we could take advantage of it. The trip leaves on August 11th. It is an 8-day trip. A lot more at WGNradio.com. All right, let's keep up on the travel talk. James Curry is on the phone line now. He's executive director with thepointsguy.com. James, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
All right, you want to go to see Van Morrison in Belfast?
That sounded like an amazing deal. I had no idea. I'm going to go to the website after this and check it out.
Yeah, actually, we did a similar trip a couple of years ago. It was a big hit. So I deal with travel and passengers. And really, the biggest headache, James, by far, are the airlines. You know, people wanting particular seats or worried about this type of airline or that type. It's just a headache dealing with them. So I was struck by your survey recently that you did to sort of assess the best and worst airlines in the U.S. Who came out on top?
Well, number one was Alaska Airlines. And, our study was a little different than other people's study because instead of just asking for opinions, which are valid but subjective, we tried to find all the hard data we could find. We crunched the numbers and then we weighted different criteria. And that's how we came up with our top 10 list.
So it wasn't just a survey of passengers.
Exactly. And that's usually if you see a headline on the internet somewhere, it's very often the best and worst airlines. And it ends up being with some site or magazine asked its readers. And that's fair enough. And we're going to be doing that on Facebook sometime too. But in this case, and for most of our quarterly reports, we did one on airports as well. the idea is let's stick to the numbers. You can't really lie with, you know, with the numbers.
So when I hear Alaska Airlines, I think about it. I think it's got a pretty good reputation in my head, but I don't have a chance to fly Alaska Airlines very much, and I would imagine that's a limitation for them.
Yeah, you know, we have four different sort of Uber categories that people will resonate with people. One is price, one is convenience, one is headaches, and one is extras. And within each of those, we have our 10 total criteria, which are very specific things. So what you just mentioned is the size of the route network, and that's part of convenience. But we also looked at, for example, the on-time arrival. We looked at cabin comfort. We looked at baggage and change fees. We looked at frequent flyer programs and lounges. So a lot of different categories for people to take a look at. And also, people can interact with this data on our site. If you go to thepointsguy.com, you'll see the best and worst U.S. airline story, and you can play around with the numbers so that the criteria is based on what your travel experiences are like.
So what's the deal with – is Virgin in Alaska, are they merging, or is there a takeover there? Or I mean, that's going to make Alaska a little bigger, right?
Yes, yes. We conducted this report using data from 2016 – that's the latest data we had for all 10 airports that were included. These are the 10 biggest airlines in the United States by passenger. And so at the time that the data came to us, Alaska and Virgin were separate, but you're right, that merger is going ahead. And there's all kind of information now about elite status and other kinds of programs that are finally being combined.
Well, it seems to me like it's good for both. I mean, because if Alaska Airlines was number one, I think Virgin was number three, not too shabby. In between them, right, was United, our hometown airline.
Yeah, I mean, that was controversial. We did not know. We had no idea. First of all, it's a fully independent site.
Yeah.
We pay for our own flights. We pay for our own hotel rooms. Total editorial integrity. We didn't know who was going to come out on top until we ran the numbers. I think a lot of people are surprised by United.
Why were they surprised?
In the end, while they didn't take the number one spot in any one place, they did well enough in across the board to take the number two spot. And that got some people riled, and some people said, finally, a little recognition.
Yeah. Well, you know, I like United. I don't fly a lot, but when I do, I don't usually have much trouble there. I will not fly, or I try to avoid, Spirit Airline. And when people tell me about the fare they got on Spirit, I said, yeah, but you're going to be stuck in Las Vegas for three extra days. right? I mean, they came in last on your study.
They did. They came in dead last, and that didn't surprise anyone. That didn't get anyone angry. But they've claimed that they're going to try to turn that around this year, and they're not going to be at the bottom of the list. I mean, obviously, they're going for just the cheapest rates, and for some people, if that's all you care about, then it's good that there's an airline for you.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's true, because I do tend to pick, well, by convenience and then by airfare, but their reputation is so bad that no matter their airfare, I think I'll stay away. But good luck to them. I hope that they can get up to next to last maybe next year.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see. We'll be doing this once a year, so you're right. They have a year now to work on it.
James Curry is the executive director of thepointsguy.com. Check it out. James, nice to talk to you today. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Steve. Good talking to you.